A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been building out a home warehouse setup, camera gear, shelving, the works. He's standardized on Eurobox containers, which we've talked about before as a genuinely smart move for modular storage. But now the shelving is going up, and he's got a young kid in the house. So the question becomes, how do you actually anchor this stuff to the wall so it doesn't become a hazard? And specifically, he's asking about anchor types, weight capacities, how to know what's strong enough, and, since he's renting, ways to do it that won't leave the walls looking like Swiss cheese when you move out, assuming drilling is allowed.
This is one of those topics where the gap between what people casually assume and what the physics actually demands is enormous, and the stakes are not theoretical. The Consumer Product Safety Commission tracks this. Between 2000 and 2023, there were over 230,000 emergency room visits in the UFRUM furniture tip-over incidents involving children. About a third of those were kids under 5, and those numbers are almost certainly undercounted because not every incident gets coded as a tip-over in hospital records.
230,000, and that's just the ones that made it to the ER.
A lot of near misses never get reported at all. And the mechanism is grimly consistent. A toddler pulls out a bottom drawer, uses it as a step, and the entire dresser or shelf unit pivots forward. The drawer becomes a lever. The center of gravity shifts past the front feet, and now you've got 150 pounds of furniture and gear coming down on a 25-pound human.
The drawer becomes a lever. That's the line that should be on every flat-pack furniture box.
It really should. And it's why anchoring isn't a nice-to-have or a we'll-get-to-it. If there's a child in the house and anything taller than about 30 inches that isn't bolted to the wall, you have an active hazard, not a theoretical one.
Let's get into the meat of this. Daniel's asking about anchor types and capacities. What's the landscape look like?
Let me start with the thing most people get wrong, which is confusing drywall anchors with wall anchors. They're different categories serving different purposes. A drywall anchor is designed to hold something onto the drywall itself. A picture frame, a light mirror, a towel rack. The load is mostly shear, downward force parallel to the wall. A wall anchor for furniture or shelving is designed to go through the drywall into the structure behind it, ideally a stud. The load here is tension, pulling straight out from the wall. That's what happens when a shelf starts to tip. And drywall alone has almost no tensile strength. It's basically compressed gypsum between two sheets of paper. You can punch through it with a screwdriver.
Step one is find the stud.
Not optional for anything heavy. And here's where I see people mess up even when they know to look for studs. They use a magnetic stud finder, it beeps, they drill, and they hit. Or they hit the edge of the stud and the screw just spins. A stud is only 1.5 inches wide. You need to be in the center. So the real pro move is find the edges of the stud first, mark both, then drill in the middle. And verify. If you're drilling and you don't feel consistent resistance through the full depth, stop and reassess.
This is the kind of thing where the YouTube tutorials make it look like you just wave a gadget at the wall, and it's solved.
The gadgets help, but they lie. Especially on older walls with plaster or with metal studs, which behave completely differently. But let's assume wood studs and drywall, the most common North American residential setup. For anything that's going to hold real weight and resist tipping force, you want a lag screw directly into the stud. A 1/4-inch lag screw into a wood stud can hold somewhere in the range of 200 to 300 pounds in shear. The limiting factor is usually not the screw, it's what you're anchoring, the bracket or strap on the furniture itself.
What if there's no stud where you need it?
That's the scenario that makes this interesting, because shelving units and dressers don't always line up with your stud spacing. Studs are typically 16 inches on center, sometimes 24. Your furniture might be 30 inches wide. You might catch one stud, but not two, or you might miss them entirely. So now we're into the world of hollow wall anchors that can actually handle tension loads, and the hierarchy here is important.
Walk me through it.
At the bottom, you've got basic plastic expansion anchors, the little rib sleeves that come with most consumer products. These are rated for maybe 20 to 30 pounds in drywall, and that's in shear, not tension. Do not use these for anti-tip anchoring. Just don't. Next up, you've got threaded drywall anchors, the ones that look like large plastic screws that you drive into the wall, and then you put a machine screw into the center. These can hold maybe 50 to 75 pounds in shear, but their tension rating is still pretty low, maybe 20 to 30 pounds. Better, but still not what you want for a tipping load.
Where do we cross into actually adequate territory?
Toggle bolts and molly bolts. These are the two heavy hitters for hollow wall anchoring. A toggle bolt has a spring-loaded wing that folds flat. You push it through a hole in the drywall, and it springs open behind the wall. When you tighten the bolt, those wings spread the load across maybe 3 or 4 square inches of the back of the drywall. A properly installed quarter-inch toggle bolt in half-inch drywall can hold over 100 pounds in tension. Some ratings go up to 200 pounds. The failure mode isn't the bolt. It's the drywall itself crumbling around the hole.
The drywall becomes the weak point.
The anchors are stronger than the medium they're in. That's the fundamental constraint. Molly bolts work on a similar principle, but they use a metal sleeve that expands behind the wall as you tighten, creating a clamp. They're generally rated a bit lower than toggles, maybe 50 to 80 pounds in tension for a good one, but they have the advantage of being removable and reusable, whereas a toggle bolt, once you push it through and tighten it, if you unscrew the bolt, the wing falls into the wall cavity and is gone forever.
There's something darkly comic about that. The toggle wing just living inside your wall now. A little metal bat.
Egg a permanent resident. And if you're a renter trying to minimize damage, toggles are actually worse for patching because they require a larger hole, typically 1/2 inch or more, and the wings tear up the back of the drywall when you eventually yank them out. Which brings us to Daniel's second question, renter-friendly solutions.
He's assuming drilling is permitted, so the landlord's okay with holes, but he doesn't want to leave a nightmare behind when he moves out.
Here's the renter's anchoring decision tree as I see it. First priority, always try to hit a stud. A couple of small screw holes in a stud are trivially easy to patch. A dab of spackle, a dab of paint, you're done. That's the least destructive option by far. If you can't hit a stud, the next best thing is a high-quality molly bolt, because when you remove it, the hole is typically 3/8 of an inch or less, and the metal sleeve doesn't tear up the back of the drywall the way a toggle does. You just patch and paint.
If you really need toggle bolt level strength without a stud,
then you're probably looking at a snap toggle or a similar product. It's a toggle bolt variant where the anchor part stays in the wall, and you can remove and reinstall the bolt without losing the wing. The hole is still large, but at least you're not dropping metal into the wall cavity every time you unmount something. These are rated comparably to standard toggles, 100 to 250 pounds in tension depending on size, and they're what I'd recommend for a renter who needs serious holding power in drywall alone.
Let's talk about the actual anchoring hardware that connects the furniture to the wall, because the anchor in the wall is only half the equation.
This is where the anti-tip strap or bracket comes in. Most furniture these days, if it's sold in the U, comes with some kind of anti-tip kit, but the quality varies wildly. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has been pushing for stronger standards. As of 2023, there's a mandatory standard, ASTM F2057, that requires clothing storage units over 27 inches tall to pass specific stability tests. But here's the thing, those tests assume the unit is anchored. The anchor is part of the compliance.
The furniture passes the test only if you install the thing they put in the box.
And a lot of people throw that hardware away or never install it. There was a famous case, IKEA's Malm dressers. Before the recall and the standard update, those things were tipping over and killing kids. IKEA ended up paying $46 million to a family in California after a 3-year-old died. The dresser came with an anchor kit. It wasn't used.
The perfect is the enemy of the installed. I've said that before, and I'll die on that hill. The best anchor in the world is useless if it's still in a plastic bag in the junk drawer.
That's actually a design problem, not just a user problem. If the installation is fiddly, or requires tools people don't have, or involves getting behind heavy furniture, the compliance rate drops off a cliff. So one thing I really like about the current generation of anti-tip products is that some of them are moving toward adhesive anchored solutions for the furniture side, combined with a cable or strap to the wall. no drilling into the furniture itself, which is a huge friction reducer.
I'm skeptical.
The good ones use 3M VHB tape, very high bond, and when applied correctly to a clean, smooth surface, the bond strength is impressive. We're talking 50 to 100 pounds of holding force. The catch is surface prep. If the furniture back is unfinished particle board or has any dust or oil on it, the adhesive won't bond properly. And temperature matters. VHB tape loses strength in high heat. So it's not a universal solution, but for a lot of consumer furniture, it's enough to prevent the initial tip long enough for someone to intervene.
Long enough for someone to intervene is doing a lot of work there.
And I want to be clear, adhesive anchors are a supplement, not a replacement, for a mechanical connection to the wall. The ideal setup is a steel strap or bracket screwed into a structural part of the furniture, not the thin back panel, which is usually 1/4 inch MDF that a screw will pull right through, and then anchored into a stud or a high-quality hollow wall anchor.
The furniture side matters too. Don't screw into the decorative back panel and call it done.
The back panel is basically cardboard. It's there for aesthetics and to prevent racking. It has essentially zero structural value for anchoring. You need to attach to the frame, the top rail, the side panel, if it's solid wood or plywood, something that's actually bearing load. On a shelf unit, the top horizontal brace is usually your best bet. On a dresser, the top rail behind the drawers.
What about the Eurobox shelving Daniel's setting up? That's not consumer furniture. It's industrial, or at least industrial adjacent.
This is actually where things get both easier and harder. Easier because industrial shelving is typically steel and designed to be bolted down or anchored. There are usually pre-drilled holes or brackets for exactly this purpose. Harder because the loads can be much higher. A fully loaded Eurobox with camera gear, lenses, bodies, batteries can easily weigh 40 or 50 pounds. Stack 4 or 5 of those on a shelving unit, and suddenly you're looking at 200 plus pounds of top heavy mass. That's a completely different anchoring problem than a dresser with some t-shirts in it.
The anchor math changes.
For that kind of load, you're not using drywall anchors at all. You're going into studs with structural screws, something like a GRK RSS or a SPAX power lag. These are hardened steel screws designed for structural connections. A 1/4 inch structural screw into a stud can handle over 400 pounds in tension. You put 2 or 3 of those into a steel shelving unit and it's not going anywhere. But you also need to make sure the bracket connecting the shelf to the screw is rated for that load. A flimsy L-bracket from the home center isn't going to cut it.
Not going anywhere is the goal, but I want to push on what properly anchored actually means in practice. Because I think a lot of people install an anchor, give it a tug, and say, yeah, that feels solid. And then 6 months later, the drywall has degraded around the anchor from vibration or humidity cycling, and the whole thing lets go.
This is the failure mode nobody talks about. Drywall is not a static material. It's gypsum, calcium sulfate dihydrate, and it's hydroscopic. It absorbs moisture from the air. In a humid environment, the area around an anchor hole can soften over time. If there's any movement, even micro-movement from people walking past the shelf or opening and closing drawers, the hole slowly wallows out. The anchor loses its grip. And one day, with no warning, it fails.
Wallows out is a phrase I wish I'd never heard. It's viscerally unpleasant.
It's the technical term for what happens when a hole gets gradually enlarged by repeated small movements, and it's why I always recommend checking anchored furniture periodically. Put a wrench on the bolt, see if it's still tight. If it spins, the anchor's compromised.
How often is periodically?
Every 6 months, minimum. Set a calendar reminder. It takes 2 minutes. Also, if you live somewhere with big seasonal humidity swings, check at the end of summer and the end of winter. The expansion and contraction of the building itself can loosen connections.
Let's talk about masonry walls, because not everyone has wood studs and drywall. Daniel's in Jerusalem. A lot of the construction there is concrete block or stone.
That changes everything. Masonry anchoring is a whole different discipline. You're not looking for studs, you're drilling directly into the wall material. For concrete block or brick, you need a hammer drill and masonry bits. The anchor of choice is typically a sleeve anchor or a wedge anchor. A sleeve anchor expands against the sides of the hole as you tighten it. In solid concrete, a 3/8 inch sleeve anchor can hold over 1,000 pounds in tension. In hollow block, it's less, maybe 200 to 400 pounds, because the block itself can fracture.
For renters in masonry buildings?
The repair is different, but not necessarily harder. A drilled hole in concrete or block can be filled with hydraulic cement or a patching compound, and once it's painted over, it's essentially invisible. In some ways, it's easier to patch cleanly than drywall, where you're dealing with paper tear-out and texture matching. The bigger issue for renters in masonry buildings is often that the landlord doesn't want you drilling into the walls at all. It's not about patchability, it's about the principle.
Which brings us to the no-drill renter solutions. And I know there are products marketed for this, but I'm deeply suspicious.
You should be. The no-drill anti-tip market includes things like adhesive straps, tension poles, and floor-anchored braces. The adhesive straps we already discussed, they're limited. Tension poles that wedge between the furniture and the ceiling can work for preventing forward tip, but they're dependent on the ceiling being structurally sound and the pole being perfectly vertical. If the ceiling is drywall and the pole isn't directly under a joist, you can punch right through. Floor braces are interesting. They extend from the furniture to the baseboard or the floor, but they create a tripping hazard and they only work against forward tip, not side-to-side movement.
They're all partial solutions.
They're harm reduction, not harm elimination. If you cannot drill into the walls, a combination of adhesive anchors, tension poles, and floor braces is better than nothing. But I wouldn't put heavy shelving in that category. For a lightweight dresser with clothes, maybe? For camera gear and Euroboxes? That needs to be mechanically fastened to structure.
Let's circle back to something you mentioned earlier. The anti-tip standards. You said ASTM F2000 V7 became mandatory. What does that actually require?
The standard requires that clothing storage units over 27 inches tall must not tip over when a 50-pound weight is hung from an open drawer or door, with all other drawers open, and the unit placed on a surface that's slightly inclined, simulating carpet or an uneven floor. And they have to pass this test both with and without the anti-tip device installed, because the standard also requires that the device be included and that the instructions are clear. The CPSC can issue recalls for units that fail.
50 pounds hanging from an open drawer. That's basically a kindergartner using it as a ladder.
That's exactly the scenario. And here's what's infuriating. Before the rule became mandatory, it was voluntary. Manufacturers could choose whether to comply. Many didn't. And the ones that did often shipped the anchor kit in a separate bag with no clear installation instructions. The new rule, which took full effect in 2023, requires the anchor to be included, the instructions to be explicit, and the unit to pass the stability test. But enforcement is still spotty, and a lot of older furniture is still out there, on the secondhand market, in rentals, handed down through families.
The secondhand market is a whole other dimension of this. You buy a dresser on Facebook Marketplace, it's from 2015, it predates the standard, and there's no anchor kit in sight.
That's where aftermarket anchoring kits come in. Companies like Hangman and Quakel OD make universal anti-tip straps that can be installed on basically any furniture. They typically include a steel cable or strap, brackets for both the furniture and the wall, and the necessary hardware. A good one costs maybe $15 to $20. For something that could literally save a child's life, it's absurd that these aren't just handed out at pediatrician visits.
Wait, pediatrician visits? You're a retired pediatrician. Did you ever hand these out?
I didn't, and I should have. This is one of those public health interventions that's so cheap and so effective that the failure to distribute it widely is a policy failure. Think about it. We give out car seats, we do bike helmet programs, we have decades of campaigns around pool safety and outlet covers. But furniture anchoring? It barely registers in public awareness. The CPSC runs an Anchor It campaign, but its reach is tiny compared to the scale of the problem.
The Anchor It campaign. That's a government slogan if I've ever heard one. Sounds like a motivational poster in a maritime break room.
It's not the catchiest, no, but the information is actually solid. They have a website with installation guides, product recommendations, and the statistics. The problem is that nobody sees it until after something happens.
All right, let's get practical. Daniel's setting up shelving. He's got Euroboxes. He's got a kid. He's renting. What's his actual shopping list?
First, a good stud finder. Not the cheapest one, the Franklin Sensors ones with multiple LEDs are reliable and don't false trigger as much as the magnetic ones. Figure $30 to $40. Second, a pack of structural screws, GRK RSS in 1/4 inch by 2.5 or 3 inch. Those will go through the drywall and deep into the stud. Third, steel L brackets or angle brackets rated for the load, something with a gusset, not a flat corner brace. Fourth, if he can't hit studs everywhere he needs them, a pack of snap toggles in quarter inch size. And fifth, for the Eurobox shelving specifically, he should check if the manufacturer sells an anchoring kit. A lot of industrial shelving systems have optional wall mount brackets designed specifically for seismic or tip-over protection.
Seismic anchoring. That's actually a useful framework. Even if you're not in an earthquake zone, thinking about it like seismic restraint gets you to the right level of paranoia.
In California, commercial shelving in warehouses has to be seismically restrained by code. The hardware for that is standardized and readily available. You can buy seismic restraint kits that include steel angles, expansion anchors, and all the hardware for maybe $30 to $50 per shelving unit. They're overkill for a home setup, but overkill is kind of the point when you're dealing with child safety.
Overkill is the point. I want that on a t-shirt, or maybe on the anchor itself.
It's worth noting that the Eurobox system Daniel's using is inherently more stable than a lot of consumer shelving because the box is interlocked and the shelving is typically steel with a wide base. But that stability can create a false sense of security. A wide base prevents tip-over in normal use, but it doesn't prevent it when a child climbs the front edge. The center of gravity still shifts forward. The base width just changes the tipping angle. It doesn't eliminate the risk.
The tipping angle. So a deeper shelf is harder to tip, but not impossible.
The math is straightforward. A shelf tips when the center of gravity moves past the front edge of the base. For a shelf that's 2 feet deep and 6 feet tall, with the weight concentrated in the top half, the tipping angle might be as low as 15 degrees. That's not much. A toddler pulling on the front edge can generate that angle with surprisingly little force, especially if the floor isn't perfectly level.
How many floors are perfectly level?
Especially in older buildings. A floor that slopes a quarter inch per foot, which is within construction tolerances, means your shelf is already pre-tilted. You're starting partway to the tipping point before any force is applied.
You're fighting gravity with a head start.
You're fighting gravity with a running start and the wind at its back.
Let's talk about the removal side for renters. Daniel's asking about solutions that won't be torturous to take out. What's the actual process for patching these holes?
For stud-mounted screws, it's trivial. Remove the screw, fill the hole with spackle or joint compound, let it dry, sand it flat, touch up with paint. The hole is maybe an eighth of an inch. For hollow wall anchors, it's more involved. With a molly bolt, you can sometimes unscrew the bolt and push the sleeve into the wall cavity, then patch the hole. With a toggle, as we said, the wing falls in. For snap toggles, you remove the bolt and the anchor body stays in the wall. You can either push it through or just spackle over it. The hole for any of these is typically 3/8 to half an inch. The patching process is the same. Spackle, dry, sand, paint. But the larger hole might need a second coat because spackle shrinks as it dries.
If you're dealing with a textured wall,
then you're in for some artistry. Matching texture is difficult. There are spray cans of texture, orange peel, knockdown, that can get you close, but it's never perfect. My honest advice for renters with textured walls, accept that your patch will be visible on close inspection and plan to negotiate with the landlord. Some landlords are reasonable about this if you've made a good faith effort. Some will take it out of your deposit regardless. Know which kind you have before you drill.
The landlord roulette. Always a fun game.
One thing that can help, take photos of the walls before you drill anything. Document the existing condition. And when you move out, do the patching properly. Don't just smear toothpaste in the holes, which is a thing people actually do, and which landlords have seen 1,000 times and will absolutely catch.
The universal spackle of desperate renters.
It doesn't work. It shrinks, it yellows, it attracts ants. Don't do it.
Let's shift to something we haven't touched on yet. The anchoring of the load itself. Daniel's got camera gear on these shelves. Even if the shelf is bolted to the wall, what's stopping a heavy lens case from sliding off the front during an earthquake or a particularly enthusiastic toddler impact?
And it's often overlooked. The shelf is anchored, but the contents aren't. For Euroboxes, the anti-pullout system Daniel mentioned in his prompt is part of the solution. Eurobox shelving typically has rails or lips that prevent the boxes from sliding forward. But for individual items on open shelves, you'd want some kind of retention. In seismic country, people use adhesive putty, shelf lips, or bungee nets. For camera gear specifically, I'd look at a combination. Keep heavy items low, use shelf lips or rails for everything above waist height, and for anything irreplaceable, consider a locked cabinet rather than open shelving.
Heavy items low. That's the earthquake safety rule, but it applies here too.
It's basic physics. Lower center of gravity, lower tipping risk, less energy in a fall. A camera body that falls from 6 feet hits with about 4 times the energy of one that falls from 3 feet. And it's more likely to hit a child on the way down.
There's the nightmare scenario. Not just the gear getting damaged, the gear hitting someone.
That's really what all of this is about. The gear is replaceable. The child isn't. I know that sounds obvious, but I think people sometimes anchor their shelves because they don't want their expensive equipment to get damaged, and the child's safety part is secondary. It should be the other way around.
The order of operations matters. Protect the kid first, the lenses second.
The beautiful thing is that the same anchoring that protects the kid also protects the gear. It's not a trade-off. A properly anchored shelf isn't going to tip in an earthquake either. Your equipment is safer. Your walls are safer. A tipping shelf can punch a hole in drywall even if nobody's in the room. The entire system is more resilient.
What's the one thing you wish everyone took away from this?
Anchoring isn't complicated, but it's specific. You need the right fastener for the wall type, the right location, ideally a stud, the right connection to the furniture, and periodic inspection. Skip any of those four, and you've got a latent failure waiting to happen. And for renters specifically, stud-mounted screws are your friend. They're the strongest anchor, the easiest to patch, and the least likely to cause deposit disputes. If you can hit a stud, you've solved most of the problem.
If you can't hit a stud...
Then you step up to snap toggles or molly bolts. You accept that the holes will be larger, and you budget an afternoon for patching when you move out, but you still anchor. The alternative isn't acceptable.
Not with a kid in the house.
Not with a kid in the house.
I think we've covered the anchor types, the capacities, the renter strategies, the furniture side considerations, and the periodic maintenance. Anything we missed?
One last thing, the floor. If your shelving is on carpet, the carpet and pad compress over time, and the unit can develop a forward lean even if it was perfectly level when you installed it. Check for level periodically and shim if needed. A shelf that's leaning forward is already partway to the tipping point, and your wall anchor is now under constant tension, which accelerates the degradation we talked about.
Constant tension, micro-movement, wallowing out. We've come full circle to the most unsettling phrase of the episode.
Wallowing out is going to haunt me now. Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1910s, botanists studying lichen on the volcanic ash plains of Vanuatu discovered that a species of cladonia was concentrating vanadium from the soil at levels toxic enough to kill grazing goats, an entirely unintended consequence of the lichen's otherwise harmless mineral. Absorption mechanism.
Right.
Vanadium poisoned goats. To wrap up, the core principle here is that anchoring is a system, not a product. Wall type, anchor type, furniture connection, load distribution, floor level, maintenance schedule. All of it has to work together. Get one piece wrong and the rest doesn't matter. But get it right and you've bought something valuable, the ability to not worry every time you hear a thump from the other room.
For Daniel's specific setup, Eurobox shelving, camera gear, rental, young child, the path is, find the studs, use structural screws and rated steel brackets, anchor to the frame, not the back panel, keep the heavy stuff low, and when you move out, a little spackle and paint will make those holes disappear. It's an afternoon of work for years of peace of mind.
That's the math that actually pencils out.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the fact that we'll now live rent-free in my head alongside wallowing out anchor holes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. We're at myweirdprompts.com and on Spotify. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Anchor your shelves.
Anchor your shelves.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host digging, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.